show. Hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. Lisa Anderson here with you. And a little preview of what is coming up on the show, because I'm pretty excited about this content we have coming down. We are heading into March, and we've got a lot of great stuff, including this show. So later on for our inbox, how does a young adult practice a healthy lifestyle in a well-rounded way? So we know scripture says your body is a temple. What does that mean as far as exercise, diet, mental health? One of our counselors is going to weigh in on that. And then for our culture segment, our own Rhett Saunders is here. He is a cybersecurity expert, and he's going to give some practical ideas for how to keep yourself safe online. So critical for us to think about this in this day and age when it's like finances, it's personal information, all of this kind of stuff. So stay tuned. Here we are for our roundtable, and we're going to have a fun discussion today. I can't remember, John Pearden's with us. Hey, John.
Hello.
Hey, I can't remember. How did we come up with this topic? We were talking about it.
It was some time behind the scenes, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably just a fun suggestion.
Okay. I think it was probably something in your life that I saw that I was like, we need to talk about this.
Probably, John. So.
Yeah. Okay. So the topic at hand is how to not like idolize things. And I'm saying that everyone says like, we throw out the word idolatry and everyone thinks in their head, even though they won't say it, well, that's not me. Okay. We all think that we don't do this because we're going to talk about stuff that are like the sneaky things, not like carved images, not like, you know, Lamborghinis and weirdness. Okay. We're going to talk about the everyday things that
Lamborghinis
maybe can just like take. Hey,
they nice cars.
If they're, yes. You know, if you were a rapper and you had a Lambo, that's what I'm saying,
if
Georgia.
You were a rapper.
Okay. So, we're going to go ahead and get honest about this, about what are the things that, in fact, Brie, I think Brie already did our post for this that we're talking about. You'll have to see it on social. It was basically like, if you ask yourself the question, do I think about God as much as I think about this thing? It's kind of like your little litmus test, not in a weird, creepy, like legalistic way, but just kind of like putting it out there, okay? So kind of some of those categories can be everything from celebrities, the shows that we love, the influencers we follow. It can be, you know, sports we are out of, you know, some people are saying, thank the Lord, out of the NFL season now, having gone through the Super Bowl. But there are other sports that people get all wrapped up in. I'm looking at John again. He's going to talk about that. And even seemingly good things, like we have our friend Jeff here. Many of you remember when Jeff was on the show back in, it was a couple of years ago now. He is a personal trainer. He's a runner. He's a fitness expert. And Georgia, you're back with us. So eager to hear your thoughts as well.
Happy to be here.
I kind of want to, let's go ahead and just throw it out there. Does someone want to define idolatry for us? When we're talking about this, you know, I kind of set it up in like a, okay, we're not talking about the Old Testament, whatever. But what is it, John, if you had to define it, what would you say?
If I were to define idolatry, I think a good litmus test is a question that I like to ask myself. Does it control me or do I control it?
Okay.
And I also cheated a little bit for this particular roundtable. I brought a definition from one of your favorite websites, Desiring God.
Oh, yeah.
And
I do like the people at DJ. Let's see what they say, and I'll let you know if I think it's accurate.
This one was pretty good. I read
this earlier.
It's
probably John Piper. I'll let you know if I think John Piper,
it was
if
John
he knows
Piper
what he's talking
this.
About. Okay.
This was an article on Desiring God from John Piper, yes.
Okay.
And he defines it as, it is the thing loved or the person loved more than God, wanted more than God, desired more than God, treasured more than God, enjoyed more than God. It could be a girlfriend. It could be good grades. It could be the approval of other people. And then he gives several other examples of what it could be.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. I think, too, I often bring up another question that helps me, because I know, and this is kind of, I think, where Piper's going with this. It's that idea of what is something in your life where the rightful place belongs to God, but somehow maybe he's been toppled out of the picture and something else is struggling, whether it's time, whether it's attention, whether it's affection. And then the flip side of that, the question is, if this thing were taken away from you, would it so rock your world? Would it devastate you to the point that you know, you would have a serious amount of reckoning to do around that. And some people think that, you know, because again, good things. Some people will put their spouse there or their kids there or whatever. And it's like, I mean, I've heard Christians say, I would, if my spouse died, I wouldn't be able to go on, you know? And so I think it's a real thing to wrestle with. So, okay, so let's put it out there. In what areas have we struggled with this and or are struggling? Like some of the stuff that just crops up where you're like, yeah, I might need to kind of put a check on that.
I'd say a big one for me in my life was running. I still currently run and train. I'm kind of back to things without going into a huge story with that. But I would say that was a pretty big idol for many years. I mean, I ran, let's say I'm 36. It's been 22 years. So I'd say somewhere around the age of 17, 18, it was like starting that process. And by the time I was 27, 28, I was there.
So why do you, what is it, Jeff, about running? Because I feel like a lot of people share that, of some kind of like competitive sport, something, whether it's team, whether it's individual. What is it that's the draw that kind of makes it so, can be potentially like obsessive?
The first thing I think of would be the constant drive to better your times. It could be the aesthetic piece of it. For me, that wasn't a huge deal. It was more, I had these goals, whether it was a time or a race I wanted to get to. For the longest time, the Olympic trials marathon was where I wanted to go. And then just, God had other plans. So, but I would say the kind of need at some point that you get to where it's like, okay, I need to do all these things. So if you drink enough water, you do the food, you do all the things you do to get better at running, you know, I don't need to list them all, but you can get very obsessive with that. And then your whole day is kind of in some way, like mentally and emotionally surrounding that. Like even if you're only running once a day, which there was times I was running twice a day, for many weeks and you know, depending on what the time frame was, but you're like constantly thinking about how is this going to affect that? And then how is my effort going to affect the rest of my life? Like, well, I have energy for these things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and then you start managing all that.
Well, it's so funny that you say that, because that kind of plays into what John was saying about, does this control you? Because I know I've read stuff about elite athletes who are like, they're getting down, Olympians and, you know, long distance runners and stuff, where it's like, can I eat these 10 calories, or can I eat them now, or should I wait, or should I, you know, and it's very much like, it's like a mathematical or an engineering equation sometimes, I think. So that's such a great point of where that can become all consuming. That's good. Georgia?
Yeah, I think not to be your classic Christian girly pop, but But I do think that marriage is an idol. And I think especially I recently broke up with my boyfriend, LOL. And so I think in the wake of that, it's been like, oh, dang, like, was that my one shot? And if that was my one shot, did I make a mistake? And if I made a mistake, then like, what is this all for? Or, you know, like, anyway, so I do think that that's been an idol that I've been struggling with, because I thought it was going to go one way and it didn't. And even though I don't think it's like completely shaken me to my core where I'm like, I'm nothing. But I do think it's shaken me in a way where it's like, okay, if that was my only shot at love, as it were, am I okay? And if that was my one shot, is that like gonna completely like shake my ability to see God's goodness? And so I do think that that's been something that I've been talking to the Lord about a lot, is just asking him to reset my heart and reframe my heart towards him, and knowing that I made the right choice and that it's okay. And that if that was, you know, a fun little thing and I never get married, that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because I still have Christ. But I do think that that is a classic struggle. And I think right now I'm just feeling it a lot more than I had in the past.
Yeah. That's such a great point, because I think even when I think back to my own relationships that have imploded, for me, there was almost a second layer of idolatry of, I should have been able to do this better. Or why the fact that this failed meant that I didn't communicate well enough, we didn't do conflict well enough, I wasn't mature enough, I couldn't say, you know, I remember after one of them just thinking to myself, like, we're two like mature Christian you know, we're believers. Like, shouldn't we be able to work everything out? And it was very disappointing to me and almost rocked my world of like, I failed. I felt like a failure, like the relationship was a failure. And so I think that can play into a lot of different, things. But John, how about you?
I would say as a kid and even sometimes in college, it was sports. NASCAR was a big one for me when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
In some ways, I felt like I desired it more. If I'm being really honest, sometimes I desired it more than going to church, which wasn't good. But I remember in college, I daydreamed of the Clemson Tigers winning the national championship, which they did my senior year, which was great. But at the end of the day, it was fun to see them win. And I still pull for them, but it wasn't the same as knowing Christ. I think now something I have to keep a guard on, honestly, is almost kind of my spiritual performance. I remember I went through a season in my walk with the Lord where I was very legalistic about the music I was listening to, and I really just wasn't enjoying fellowship with the Lord during that time. And so I was doing a lot of quote-unquote godly activities, but honestly, my own performance was an idol, and yet it fell way short, and I really just wasn't enjoying time with God.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think some of this breaks down to, you know, we could talk about it, and we have been a little bit, in the sense of how we, there's like our affections, like where we put our affections, where we put our priorities, but there's also just straight up like how we spend our time. I think a lot of this plays into that, whether it's, you know, I mean, John, you can't go to every NASCAR race, though I know that you are going to one and we have been hearing about it. Okay, let's be honest.
By the time this airs, it will have just happened, yes.
Okay, so by the time it airs. So we, maybe we'll just do a whole, you know, update on John's
NASCAR adventure.
Borderline idolatry situation. We'll see. But like, I think this also comes down to the amount of time we spend on social media or following our favorite celebrities or our favorite shows. I mean, there are some times where I feel like I have been more invested in fictional characters in shows than like in my own family or my own friendships. And I'm just like, I have to check myself and be like, what am I actually doing here? I'm like talking about these people like they actually exist.
Yeah.
How do you think that's come about? Like, what are some of the dangers of that? Whether they're, again, could be fluff, you know, celebrity type people, but it's also great people too. Like, sometimes we could put, you know, John quoted John Piper, we could put theologians there or our favorite pastors or worship artists.
I think it affects me more than I want it to, which is super annoying. And I do think that, you know, when we talk about celebrities, I think there's even Christian celebrities. I think in college, a big one was Sadie Robertson. And I think, you know, even Christian celebrities, we can look at them and we can think, oh my goodness, like they have their whole life together and they're the best Christian and they're getting to travel and they dress nice and they're fit and they got married to the super hot Christian. Where do you find those? And it's just like, it's just really devastating to see, I think, especially Christian celebrities, because that to me feels even harder because you're like, not only do they have what the world would consider good, but they also have God.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, not only do they have the Lord of Lords, but they also conveniently have money and wealth and beauty and a hot husband. And I think that is really hard. And so that has been something that lately I've been having to keep my time off of social media, kind of keeping that in track, just because, especially, you know, again, not to be like, I'm broken up with, blah, blah, blah. But I think like, when you're facing that, everything you see feels so much worse than it does when you're like, quote unquote, happy and fulfilled. And so anytime I see people traveling, I'm like, oh, like, why am I not traveling? Or, you know, when I see people posting pics with their bays, I'm like, I had one of those once. And so I think just reminding myself that I'm like, that is a highlight reel. And also practicing gratitude, because I'm like, okay, I can make an idol out of those people, out of those things, out of being able to travel, out of being able to spend money. But I'm like, ultimately, you can't really make idols out of things when you're being grateful for what the Lord has right in front of you.
Well said.
I think another indicator, and yeah, totally well said, Georgia, on some of the points you brought up. I think a great indicator as well is if you are trying to seek God and he asks you, hey, give this up for a time, then are you going to be obedient or not? Mm-hmm. Or would it train wreck your whole week to be able to take a break from something? Because I know that if I'm constantly checking Facebook or if I'm constantly checking Instagram or YouTube, YouTube is my personal favorite.
Yeah.
it's almost one of my coping mechanisms, but there's a lot of great music and videos on there. But if I took, let's say, a week off, I know it's not a necessity like oxygen is or like water is, but could I be okay? Would I actually make time for the Lord, or would it send me into a tailspin and I'm hitting my head against the wall after only 5 minutes?
Yeah.
I think that's a great indicator too. That's why we have to be seeking the Lord on a continual basis, because many times if there's an idol in our lives, he'll convict us of it. And sometimes it's good to just pull the plug for a few days.
Yeah, that's a good point. It reminds me of something. In fact, just this morning, I decided yet again that I'm going to do this. I've got a few games on my phone, and some of this is just straight up time management. And some of it, I think, has started approaching the area of even using Jeff's example of like when you're going after that next, you know, the next level or the next, you know, what's your game going to be? Even in dumb games, I mean, the amount of time I am spending managing just levels of these various games. But then it's not just that. Then it's like throughout the day, I have to collect the game pieces and the various tokens I need in order to do the games. So here's my thing. This is my new year. We're well into the new year already. But okay, I have one game that I just have this next level that I'll get to. When I do, I am getting rid of all these games off my phone. Like, I am just, it is so, because I know that all of you listening know how mature and how godly I am. And I'm just now exposing this one little, you know, chink in my armor. No, I'm just kidding. But it is like so ridiculous. And it is, I mean, I would never, like, I was just going to say, I would never publicly say that's an idol, but I just did. In the sense of like, what in the world am I even doing? And how that's a very insidious way of the way that time and attention can sneak up on you when it's just spent like frittering time away with things. But it's always, I don't want this game to beat me, you know? So I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, I don't want to let it beat me. So
what game is it?
Well, I have a couple different ones. One is this random bingo one. One is like, it involves like a, it's kind of like a Wordle kind of thing.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Then
yeah,
I justify that because that's just a brain game. That's keeping my mind fit, you know? Yeah. So of course that's good.
Yeah.
You know, like actually doing my job at work can't do
cortex.
That, you know?
Yeah.
Just, exactly. Like maybe I could just do my job.
The mind reps in.
Exactly. So it's just, it's ridiculous. So anyway, okay. So what does it look like to go after health and balance in this area? How do you guys do that? How do you go about finding a way to do the things you love and be about the things you love, but also not let them rule you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'll kind of stick to my running example, I guess, how I've been able to go from is point A to point B, literally. So I came back to church about 7 years ago. And that was when I realized that it was an idol. I hadn't really used that verbiage before. So when I started thinking about, I kind of used running to my advantage in the beginning. And I was like, okay, how can I be closer to God? How can I get a better relationship? And I was like, okay, I'm good at this. And I'm good at like having that in my day. And so I'm like, use the same mindset to, you know, do my spiritual rhythms, this, that, and the other. And it helped for a while. And then I kind of dipped. John, you mentioned this a minute ago, but I would say I almost kind of dipped into a legalism place for like a short time. And I was like, wait, you know? And then I would kind of flip it back the other way around, where then once my eyes opened up a bit more, I don't really know how to word that, but I could see from a much broader perspective how I had flipped it, I guess, incorrectly, if you will, if that makes any sense. But
yeah, that's good. Well, and I know you still compete, you still do marathons. And so it's not like you said, well, I need to just stop doing marathons.
So I really just started. I mean, I actually have only done 2 marathons, which a lot of people are always surprised about because I hadn't done any before I essentially quit a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But I kind of took the same, I guess, sense of calm that I got when coming back to church. And I was like, okay, why can't I have that here? And I think about all the times I've just literally ran like 2 hours by myself. And I just started, like, I went pretty simplistic in the beginning. I kind of honestly just started praying at times when I was, like, it was a beautiful day. Like, today would be a great day if I went running right now. And just enjoyed being out there. And then just doing those little things started aligning me to, like, this is just something I do. It's not who I am. And once I got to that point, then I was like, oh, my body started to heal. And there was other factors to that, of course. But then I was like, okay, well, I like doing this. And I also coach people, which helps me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's good that I'm doing this. I don't have to, but that does help me.
Yeah,
you know, and I was like, I want to do this again. And I was like, okay, I'll just do it minimally. And then I just, I've literally taken it very slow.
Yeah.
Just one step at a time, and I keep checking myself. Because I think, like, right now in the season I'm in, I feel like I could go back to the pattern I used to be in.
Yeah.
So whether it's this or some of my close circle, I feel like I have good people to remind me.
Well, and it's good because what you're saying there without saying it is that it is a part of who you are. It doesn't have to be who you are. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer your identity. It's not your main, the main thing about you, but it's definitely a piece of who you are. That's good. Georgia.
I think confessing to people that you're close with is kind of how I've found that balance. Obviously, I think you can set boundaries for yourself with whatever it is that you put up on a pedestal. But I think when you voice it to firm believers in your life, it's a lot harder to continue going with where you're going. And honestly, like, I was having a pretty hard time last week just with that, and then just feeling like envious and jealous of, like, things that I couldn't have and that I was putting on a pedestal of, like, okay, like, I can't travel right now. I'm trying to save money, or, like, you know, I'm not in a relationship right now, and that's okay. And I confessed at church. We always pray with one another, and I just was sitting with some of the people that I do my Bible study group every month or every week, and I was like, just felt it on my spirit. They're like, how can we be praying for you? And I was like, you guys, I'm really struggling with envy and idolatry and jealousy, and I'm embarrassed to say that. And they were like, dude, we all do. It's okay. And that was really freeing to be able to say that to my brothers and sisters in Christ and not have them judge me, because to me, I was judging myself. I was like, this is horrible. Who feels jealousy and envy? That is dumb. That is so ew. And they were like, dude, no, we get it. And they prayed for me. And I like, that was just awesome to see the Lord really work in that way. So I think confessing to your brothers and sisters what you're struggling with, what you're putting up on a pedestal, I think that helps immensely.
Yeah, great thoughts, you guys. I think also something that helps me to keep God at the center of my life is having that time with Him one-on-one every day. And I need that just as much as anything, because if I don't have that, it's very easy. Even last night, I found myself getting agitated at certain people over stuff that really didn't matter. And part of it was that I needed sleep, and part of it is that I needed to spend time with the Lord. And it just so happened that my Bible reading yesterday happened to be Ephesians chapter 4, which is about unity in the body of Christ. And I got pretty convicted when I read that too. And it only took just a couple of minutes, but it was a great reset to be able to say, hey, wait a minute, God sees exactly what's going on in my heart, stuff that other people don't see right now. He knows what's going on between my ears, and He's going to call me out on it. Mm. And that was just a beautiful, beautiful reminder that He sees it all. But I think if you find yourself, a good litmus test for if something is an idol is, does it ruin your weekend if your football team loses? Mm-hmm. Does it ruin your week if a celebrity you really like makes a bad decision? And to George's point, I mean, there's time we need to confess, and there's times we need to be honest about where we're at, but it's also good to recognize, hey, people are still people. We're all broken in some ways, and God is God. So that's why we got to take things to Him.
Yeah. Great thoughts, you guys. Thanks for weighing in on this. I really appreciate the conversation. Excellent.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. You're my calm in the chaos, my peace in the war. You speak into the madness and tell me I'm yours. Tell me I'm yours. You're my calm. You're my calm in the chaos.
satisfy my soul. You are my every heartbeat, every breath that I breathe. You're all I need, you're all I need. You speak life, sing your love over me. You're all I need, you're all I need. Caught up in your captivating, never failing love. You are my every heartbeat, every breath that I breathe. You're all I need, you're all I need.
All right, folks, for this week's culture segment, you may remember back in the day, you might have to Google it. We had a... Google it, search it on our site, whatever. We had our friend Rhett Saunders here to answer a question that came in from one of you about online safety and something very particular. And so we were like, why don't we do a culture with him and talk about maybe the breadth of stuff that really is going on in the world of internet and cybersecurity and all that that plays into. So we're really excited to welcome him back for this culture segment. He is actually here at Focus on the Family. He's our director of cybersecurity and compliance. He's also a university lecturer. He's a U.S. Army veteran and worked for the Federal Reserve, where he actually led enterprise risk management discussions. And so he's got a lot of experience in this area. We are going to talk to him today about protecting yourself online in a myriad of ways. So, Rhett, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Thank you, Lisa.
Well, super great to have you. Okay, so first of all, this isn't, I don't know many like elementary or junior high kids who are like, you know, one day the one job goal that I have is to get into cybersecurity. So tell us, how did this come about for you?
So my journey into cybersecurity began during my service in the military intelligence when I joined back in the 1990s, going back a little bit, and where it was actually a crucial part of my responsibilities. Working initially at NSA, National Security Agency out of Fort Meade, Maryland, I excelled in supporting military members in the field and helping to protect our great nation against threat actors of the world. Mm-hmm. The turning point, however, came from a deeply personal experience where my father fell victim to identity theft, and despite my best efforts to help him recover, the emotional impact was devastating. And tragically, he took his life in 2010. And while we don't get to know the answers to the reasons why, I know what he was struggling with during that time. And this personal loss ignited my passion to help others avoid the pitfalls of identity theft and to understand the human impact behind digital security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So it's interesting. I mean, and I think that's, you know, we think about parents and grandparents and a lot of folks. I mean, I remember first introducing my parents to the internet and it was like, are you asking me to walk on the moon? You know, so a lot of people are like, oh, you know, okay, that's, there's so much out there. And I think there are so many people that are targeting older folks. What's wild is we're talking today to 20 and 30 somethings who you would think would be super savvy about online stuff and about, you know, what some of the threats are out there, what some of the malware and stuff like that is that's available. But what would you say, you know, I mean, again, if you were talking to a young adult today, what would you say are some of the most common mistakes that young adults are making that maybe they don't even know about?
This is a very good question and one that comes up often even in my own home with my my children growing up and learning. And I've also made the same mistakes. And oftentimes us as experts are just sharing, you know, with other generations kind of the lessons learned. Mm. And so, and I'm always learning. So one common mistake that I'm seeing, you know, and I include myself in this, is oversharing personal information on social media, which can lead to identity theft or other forms of exploitation. Mm. And oftentimes we don't really think about it because it comes natural to share what's going on in our lives so that we can keep our family and friends up to date. However, we might have people that are lurking in our online profiles that we don't want there, that purport to be somebody that they're not.
Okay. So give us an example of that, because I feel like this is me pretty much 24/7 of just jumping on Instagram, putting up something, who knows? I mean, I know people have called me on like, Lisa, you took that photo and it's pretty obvious like that's at your house. Like, what are you doing? And I'm just clueless. So give us I guess that would be an example, maybe through photos, but what are some other ways that oversharing happens on social in particular?
Yes. I think that we immediately want to share kind of the highlight reels of our life by sharing, you know, we're going on vacation, we got this really awesome trip coming up, mm-hmm. and we're leaving our home and we're going to be gone for 2 weeks in Italy, mm-hmm. as an example. And so now we've given away a lot of information by doing that. And if we're not necessarily monitoring all the people that are connected to us, that we've maybe allowed frequently to become friends with because we want to grow our network, there could be people in our midst that are using that information against us.
Yeah. So give us, that's such a good point, and I think that is something that we don't necessarily think of. Something that young adults definitely think of and we see, and especially in the workplace, you know, we go to seminars about this and whatever, is just straight up like spam and fraudulent links and how you're going to get, you know, someone's going to sneak in via something. But what would you say, how do we spot something as spam? Like, what are some of the clues that we should look for? Because I feel like people are getting a little more savvy in how to trick people in this, even younger folks.
Yes, and that's absolutely occurring, especially with the advent of all this AI and ChatGPT stuff, mm-hmm. where now we can use this technology to make it look even more authentic and real. And so really, our ability to spot spam is becoming even more difficult. But there are still telltale signs, like generic greetings. For example, hello, but they don't actually put your name. Mm-hmm. Spelling errors might be a good indicator, an urgent request for personal information. We need this information now. Mm-hmm. So anything that kind of appeals to the urgency of the now and requesting things in such a way that just doesn't feel right, mm-hmm. that would be good indicators as to spotting spam.
Yeah. It always seems to me, I feel like this has happened recently because we're obviously heading into, or we're in now, tax season. A lot of places will try to use something that is a little bit alarmist, you know, about like, you're not going to get your return if you don't give me this info or update XYZ page or form or whatever. And I think that, you know, can kind of people can forget like, oh yeah, that's not always legit. And so sometimes even checking the email address that it came from, you know, can be helpful. I know I've been told that before, so that's good to know. What about, let's talk a little bit about passwords, because I know this like sends me over the edge, is like when I get to heaven, I'm hoping there aren't going to be passwords. I don't know. It's not in scripture, so I'm really hopeful. But I feel like I lose my mind over changing passwords. It's not complex enough. And then I have like my IT friends who are like, it should be 36 characters and not make sense. And I'm like, absolutely not. Will I ever be able to do that? So help us figure out what's a safe way to do passwords without wanting to curl up in a ball and sob. And are there apps that make this easier? Are there places to house passwords? What are some kind of quick and dirty tips on that?
Yes, it's actually the bane of existence for even us cybersecurity professionals. Mm-hmm. We would also like to get rid of passwords altogether. And there are lots of companies that are rallying around this battle cry to move away from passwords. And it will be a thing in the near future that we start moving away from passwords. But in the interim, dealing with passwords, I'm going to probably share something that most people probably don't share often, is you don't need to use a mix of letters, numbers, and symbols. Mm. Really, what you need is just a passphrase where you can actually remember something in a sentence. For example, I love my red Alfa Romeo 2024 explanation point. That would be an example of a really good password. Mm. As it relates to passwords that you can use to remember, you can actually use password vaults. That's something that allows you to share multiple passwords instead of having to remember all your passwords or just one for multiple sites. You might want a password vault that allows you to remember all those passwords. So there is software that I'll provide here today that you're able to use and download for free.
Wow, that's great. To that point, it makes me think of how, you know, a lot of people have gone completely the opposite direction and they're like, I'm not going to share anything. And can you, whether you have some cautions for this or maybe you can allay our fears around like stuff that a lot of people would consider legit internet stuff, like online shopping or storing credit cards on an airline site or whatever. I mean, some people would be like, no, don't do that. Is that okay? Or are there things that we should be aware of with that kind of stuff? I mean, are places secure enough that we can trust them with our info?
So that's a very good point as it relates to our online shopping experience, the websites that we access. So yes, at the end of the day, we have to trust the merchants that we're doing business with, just like we go into a physical store, we trust that establishment. So take Amazon.com. We want to make sure that, yes, it's Amazon.com. It's not Amazon with a zero in it, that we're going to the right website, that we have the secure lock when we're actually connecting to that website. And then, yes, I would recommend using this password vault and the recommendations I'll provide here, where it can actually remember your password and enter those credentials in to that website securely so that you don't have to remember it. And if there's an option to use additional factors where you have to enter maybe 6-digit code to get into that website, highly recommend that you actually use that, especially for sites where you spend most of your money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. I've noticed that, and again, this is where people get frustrated and they're tempted to do less security because they'll have to do some kind of a 2-factor authentication, or they'll, like I'm in a situation right now on social where I needed to do it, but the authenticator I used like went away. So now I got to figure out like, how do I go back into this thing? I don't know. It's like, I have a liberal arts degree. What am I even doing? So that makes a lot of sense. So to that point, what are just some of your recommended, like just some of the ways to generally keep ourselves safe online? I feel like it's every week I'm getting some kind of ad around a new software to use. You know, ours is the best, ours is the most secure, and it's cheap, and it's, you know, and I never know. So what would be your professional opinion?
Yes, I would highly recommend installing reputable antivirus, anti-malware software on any of your computing devices, whether it's a laptop, a desktop, and even our smartphones. Hmm. They're not immune to this stuff. And I'll also provide a list of some of those reputable companies that you can download. Some of them are pay, some of them are free, but all of them are very effective. I would recommend also keeping your software and operating systems up to date. I recognize, even in my use of my iPhone, that it's kind of an inconvenience to have to now update my iOS, and now I'm without my phone for, you know, 10, 15 minutes until it completes its update. But that's required to stay one step ahead of our threat actors, the bad guys, because it's an arms race. And what we're trying to do is stay current, and being slightly ahead of the bad guys in the world by staying current with our software.
Hmm, that's good. To that point, and we will, you know, folks, we're going to have a link to a document that Rhett is creating for us that has some of these tips. So don't worry about it. We'll get that to you for sure. But to that point, Rhett, you mentioned phones, smartphones. Is there anything unique about portable devices, smartphones, or something that we should be aware of? I think we often think of our laptops or whatever and like, okay, what does this look like? Our emails. But then we tend to just think, oh, our phones. I mean, they're all over the place. We leave them places. People are picking them up. You know, who knows? I've left mine in restaurants and had to go back and get it. Anything in particular we should be aware of there?
Yes, with smartphones, especially how they're everywhere, and the threat actors of the world recognize that this is something that everybody has, so they're targeting them. One thing that we can do is we can also make sure that when you log in to, say, an iOS device as an example, and there's also an Android equivalent I'll provide, when you log into your iOS or your iPhone, what you can actually set up is a passcode for your account so that in the event that your iPhone were actually stolen and they got through the password, they're not able to change your account and then lock you out of your account. Mm. So I'll actually provide instructions on how to simply make that setting different from your first logon, and then that would actually prevent somebody from stealing your identity and your account altogether.
Okay. And what about, I know that to our staff here at one point, you were introducing kind of, I can't remember if it was a device or whatever. It makes me think of, I'm currently going through the show Person of Interest, where they're just straight, or, you know, walking around force pairing their phones with people. We hear about RFID and people like on vacation who credit cards and whatnot, you know, things even remotely, like no one ever thinks, like they think this is in my pocket, this is in my purse, nothing's going to happen to this. But what are some of the tricky things that now or even in the near future could be available to thieves and scammers and stuff, as, you know, even as they're out and about?
This is a very good question, very insightful. And we do need to be concerned about the future as it relates to how we're able to use tech to eavesdrop on our smartphones. And it very much is technology out there that allows for what we've seen. And I really actually do love that show, Person of Interest. There is a lot of truth to the things that they represent in that show. If I put on my tinfoil hat and think about this for a moment, I would have to keep my device in a Faraday bag or a bag that basically prevents the phone from being able to send any signals out or receive any signals. So there is technology that can actually subvert your phone. And a way to prevent that would be to make sure that you're keeping tabs on your phone where it is in your possession, especially in public locations, short of getting that Faraday bag. Mm-hmm. But that's for us tinfoil hats.
All right. Kind of in our last couple minutes here, I was thinking of just things that maybe are right now, even, you know, as we're end of February here, some of the biggest concerns that are out there, like things that are coming through right now, things that are, you know, seem to be popping up more often. I mean, you know, a few years ago, it was something, now it's something new. I think of, I had a friend, a coworker, who recently ordered something off of an ad on social media. I think it was on Facebook, and it was like grossly, I mean, I don't know what, you know, I don't know if it was a scam in the sense of them taking info. He had to follow it up and everything, but he just did not receive what was promised. It ended up being just some garbage, you know, whatever. He had given his info, you know, to make the purchase and whatnot. So he was kind of freaked out about that. I mean, that's kind of, you think that if you see an ad, people are like legitimately posting ads and they've been vetted, you know, on sites and stuff. So what, I mean, that's something I thought of, but what are some of the other things that seem to really be cropping up continuously around nowadays?
Yes. In your online shopping experience, to your point about those ads, well, even the bad actors, the threat actors of the world that want to do harm, steal, kill, and destroy has always been their motive. They too can also get out an ad, just like the good guys can, or people who are actually trying to make a profit. So it is something that we still have to go back to the point earlier about spotting spam. We have to keep an eye out for, is this a reputable company? And there's a lot of websites that you can go to check up on that company, like BBB, Better Business Bureau. You can actually check if it's a legitimate company and see what type of reviews they have before actually doing business with them. And so there's some extra steps that I would recommend folks take before purchasing something. And this is actually something that comes up a lot, even with my wife, with her online shopping habits, where she likes to shop from Shein, or I think it's called Shein.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there's Temu.
Yeah.
But it starts getting very questionable quickly.
Yeah.
And that's where we might have to use our discernment and say, I'm not sure that I'm going to purchase from them because I'm not hearing other people have good experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is good, where the power of kind of collective, you know, reviews and stuff can be helpful in people's experience for that. So that is good. One other question I had, because again, it reminded me of something that happened recently. There was someone who tapped into, I don't know if it was our database at church or whatever, but we ended up, a bunch of us got an email ostensibly from our pastor, basically saying, you know, hey, everyone, we have some missionaries that we want to send gift cards to. So go ahead and, you know, buy some gift cards, send them to me. And, you know, here, click on this link and you can get them over to me this way. And like, people did it, you know, again, because again, it seems so legit, and it looked like it was coming from his email address, and they had obviously tapped in and found the server with church members' addresses. Is that, you know, I mean, a lot of our audience are like, yeah, Lisa, you know, I try not to even use my email anymore except for work. But okay, well, whatever. Some of us still use email. But if your church sends you an email, you better open it. So all that said, I mean, that to me seems kind of an out of the box idea of like using people that you know now to scam yourself and to scam others. Have you seen that more prevalent lately?
Yes. And we're seeing a lot more of that because we recognize that a lot of people have been looking diligently at anything that they don't recognize and then don't want to respond to. So now they realize, okay, we have to get at their network, just like in LinkedIn or Facebook, where we get in as somebody that you might know. Then at that point, you already have a trust that's established with that person, and they can use that trust to take advantage of you.
Yeah, so true. So give us, as we finish up here, Rhett, give us some ideas for that person that probably has been burned. They have been scammed. You know, maybe small things, but maybe some bigger things. What are those, other than, you know, that initial freak out, what are some next steps that they can take to not only ensure that they shore up what has happened, but that they prevent stuff in the future?
Yes, if you're a victim of online fraud, the first step is to report the incident to the relevant authorities, whether it's the police your local police department to file a report before you actually reach out to your bank, your credit bureaus, to now report the loss. From there, you want to probably change your passwords immediately anywhere you have an online account or anything that was affected by the specific data breach. And then I would highly encourage everybody to consider locking down your credit bureaus, where you can actually perform a permanent freeze, where it only affect your current credit, meaning it's not going to affect your rating. It just affects your ability to get new credit. So you'll have to create a temporary thaw that you can perform online that's immediate. And you just request for maybe 24 hours, you allow that particular bank to now be able to perform a review of your credit report. Otherwise, it will be in a permanent frozen state that prevents anybody from being able to peer into your credit report. And I'll provide a listing of all of those locations where you can actually perform that action.
It's perfect. Well, thank you so much. So practical. I mean, this is super awesome. First off, y'all, we want to make sure that you know that, you know, what Rhett has been mentioning, like these resources that he's going to provide, we're going to link to them. We're going to have a PDF available to you in the show notes. So you can just go here to this episode, which is 839, and we will make that available to you. Also, just because, you know, we think in tandem with this, isn't it great to just, you know, people that are freaking out about social, just like get off of social for a while, if not forever. And we want to make available to you, I know some of you have asked about this in the past, for a gift of any amount to Boundless this week, the 40-day social media fast, exchange your online distractions for real life devotion. And so that's just something that's a good habit to build anyway, by our friend Wendy Speak. So again, boundless.org, you can search for 839 and you'll see the book there, You Give a Gift to Boundless. We want to send a copy of this book to you. So a lot of resources available to you today. So Rhett, thanks again for weighing in on this.
Yes, thank you, Lisa, for having me.
These hands do nothing until you compel me. These feet go nowhere until you propel me. My heart is bare until your spirit rushes through. This life is nothing without you. I've reached the end of what my sight can show me. I only want to know the one who knows me. My heart was searching, now I finally found the truth. This life is nothing without you. Let your hope be my prayer. Let your love.
Well, hey, everyone. As always, those of you who have been listeners for a long time, you know that we take your questions, your actual questions, if you hit us up in our DMs or you email us, editor@boundless.org, and we get an expert to answer them. We call it our inbox. And today we're going to answer another one of your questions. And so we have got a counselor here to answer this question. We have Patrick Hill. Patrick, welcome.
Greetings, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, our privilege to have you. And we're going to give you a question today from one of our listeners, which is interesting. Of course, we're kind of newish into the year. And so a lot of people are thinking about health and fitness and all this. So this is a great question with a theological twist. Our listener wants to know, how should young adults practice a healthy lifestyle in a way that's biblical? What does it look like to actually treat your body like a temple through things like exercise, diet, and guarding your mental health?
Love this question. Paul directly tells us that our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. Now, as I take a step back and consider the temple, not only is the exterior to be kept up to date, but we want to take care of the interior as well. Parts of the temple that have movement, we want to make sure they're functioning well. We want to make sure things are clean, well taken care of, or the temple could rot from the inside out. So let's consider how God's crafted us. He's created us as physical beings with emotions, with a mind, and a spirit. So if we want to consider a healthy lifestyle in a way that's biblical, we've got to really take in all of those aspects of our creation. So first, let's think of the physical. I love to just be able to find something you enjoy and do that thing, whatever that thing may be. If you can get outside doing that exercise, that activity, and enjoy God's creation, spend some time perhaps praying to God while you're running, walking, whatever, that's awesome. A way for you to get out in creation and enjoy his presence and also move. Maybe find community in those things that you enjoy. Think about a cycling club, walking club, basketball team, golf, baseball, whatever it may be. Find other people who like doing the very things you do. Join them. See if you can build some community that way. Great way also to just be able to share the gospel with others. The bottom line, move more. Oftentimes, the word exercise gets a bit of a bad rap, so just think about a plan, an intentional plan to move more. I like to think about when I'm doing household chores, vacuuming, doing yard work, whatever, along with getting things done in my home, it's also exercise. It's a great opportunity to move, so kind of knocking out two birds with one stone. So just think about that idea of moving more, and how can I incorporate time with the Lord while I'm moving? Secondly, let's take a look at the emotions. So God created emotions. Emotions are information, data, telling us when something is maybe happening around us that is good, bad, or just meh. Bottom line, pay attention to those emotions. Don't ignore, don't stuff, don't sweep emotions under the rug, but consider, what is it that I'm feeling? I wonder why I'm feeling that. Maybe you can talk to a pastor or a counselor, someone that you can trust, kind of share what you're going through, what you're feeling. Maybe create safe community to be able to share your emotions with others in a safe way. Obviously, you want to pick some folks that you trust and that's going to allow you just to be open and safe. Be curious about what you're feeling. I've already stated that. There's something usually happening below the surface with our feelings, whether good, bad, or otherwise, but be curious and seek some additional support if that would be helpful. Paul tells us to be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ. Pay attention to your emotions. Give attention to your mind, your mental health. Paul writes in 2 Thessalonians, may the Lord of peace himself give you peace at all times and in every way. Think about how you're fostering healthy thinking habits. What are you doing intentionally to grow your thought life, to nurture your thought life? What kinds of things are you reading, watching, listening to? Are you finding yourself staring at your phone all day, mindlessly looking at reels? Are you a passive engager with reading, listening, watching? Or are you someone who is actively pursuing how to grow and mature your thought life. Part of good mental health care may also include seeking out a counselor, psychologist, or a psychiatrist. If you sense something is off, seek some help and some resources. We have a staff of professional and pastoral counselors here at Focus on the Family. We stand at the ready to receive your call to offer a free consultation. So if you think that'd be helpful, give us a call. We'd love to connect with you. Now, finally, let's take a look at the Spirit. Matthew 6:33, Jesus says, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. Spend time with the Word of God and in prayer. We only are going to get to know our Creator, our Savior, as we spend time with him and listen to him. So maybe while we're out doing a walk, we can also be praying, connecting with God, spending time listening, perhaps, through a Bible app while we're walking, running, biking, whatever. Consider getting into a community of believers. There's so many folks that I talk to on a regular basis who are not actively involved in a church for one reason or another. So I would strongly suggest finding a good Bible-believing church in your area. Get plugged in. Get to know folks who believe and love Jesus like you do and become part of that fellowship. And finally, exercise your faith muscle. Look for ways to serve others in Jesus' name. Figure out a place where you can serve, and that's going to help you be part of the community as well. Join in others as you're serving folks. Offering that cold cup of water in the name of Jesus can help to really strengthen your spirit. Paul wraps everything up neatly in how we can properly care for ourselves when he says in Romans 12, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Patrick, for weighing in with that. I do want to circle back and remind folks that Patrick did allude to our counseling department here at Focus on the Family and Boundless. And if that's something that you think would be helpful to you, especially on those mental health things that he was mentioning, you can go to boundless.org/counseling and get a consultation complimentary with one of our licensed professional counselors. And they can even give you a referral for ongoing care to someone in your area. And so it's just a great way to kind of shore that up and get a head start on that. So, all right, folks. Well, that is it for this week's show. I will see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org from Focus on the Family.
It can be challenging to inspire your community to see life the way God sees it. So what's the solution? Well, on June 15th, Focus on the Family is hosting Sea Life 24. And no matter where you are or who you are, you can be a part of this free event with speakers like Ben and Kirsten Watson and real stories about choosing life. Sea Life 24 will inspire you to translate your faith into action. Register today at sealife24.org.